Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Hansen.
And I'm Maureen Smith. And today we are joined by Nat Madrid. How are you today?
I'm great. How are y'all?
Really good. So for those of you who are listening, who have listened to us since the beginning, we've been around since the beginning of 2017. Nat was within our first 100 episodes.
Probably first 50 even. I don't even know, honestly, but very, like, because we're coming up on 400 really fast. And Nat, you were on the D&D thing.
Oh my god, yeah.
The live show.
Oh, yes, I was. Oh my gosh, I totally forgot about that.
I know, I have no idea what flashed me back to that, but I just remembered that, too.
Oh my god, that was so fun.
That was so long.
That was at Heartland's Cafe.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
Oh, R.I. fucking P, dude. I cannot believe that.
I'm so bummed. We live on that street. We live one block away. Yeah. And
what's it,
yeah,
what's
Heartland
it like?
Is gone.
Is it still, is anything there?
No. It's
That's
still
wild.
A lot.
Weird.
Yeah.
Is the whole
they tore
campus
it down?
Gone?
Yeah.
Right?
It's gone.
The whole oh my god, even that little
Yeah,
ladder?
They leveled it. Yeah.
That is wild.
Why would they do that? I don't understand that.
Well, wasn't it like not in good condition?
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, sorry, we're we're pontificating on air right now.
We're reminiscing on the past.
yeah. Well, it's really, really great to talk to you. Preface of prefaces, it is pandemic hours, meaning we're still doing socially distanced recording things, and so we're recording over Discord, over cell phones and things, so if there's any audio quality issues, please forgive us, and we're just so thankful to you, Nat, for being flexible and coming on the show.
Oh, I'm so glad that I can. I'm recording from my new space.
Yay!
And I wish there was more furniture in here so there would be less of an echo, but I'm very excited to talk to y'all about it and tell you about what I'm going to do with the space and my business and my practice.
I'm excited
to talk about all of that.
Yeah.
Well, so for those who are unfamiliar, can you explain what your business is?
Sure. So my name is Nat, and I have a small business called Nat Glitter Kink. It is a fetish fashion brand, and I make a full range of products for fashion and play. I mostly specialize in making fetish wear out of vinyl, PVC, latex, not so much leather, because there's so much of that on the market right now. But my collection seeks to make like really fun, glittery, sparkly, queer fetish and bondage gear and fashion.
Well, and what I love, and this is something that we talked about a couple years ago, but what I love kind of about your origin story is that you are a member of the kind of like the fetish and play community in Chicago, and you didn't really see yourself and your aesthetic represented in what was available as far as gear. And so I love that you saw that and identified a problem and was just like, shit, I want what I want, so I'm just gonna make it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been really funny and cool seeing, you know, I started my business while I was in college and then like officially kind of launched it in 2013 after graduating from the fashion program at SAIC. So 2013 was when I started my Instagram. You know, it was kind of the early days of all of this. And it's really cool to see like how my work has like impacted the collective kind of queer aesthetic and fetish aesthetic, and see kind of like my impact in a way.
Yeah.
I was just telling my partner the other day that I saw Early to Bed, who I love, and I stock at that shop too here in Chicago. They did an Instagram post featuring this sort of like clear silicone dildo with all these little fragments of colored silicone inside that looked like confetti. And everyone was loving it. And I don't want to give myself credit if that person's never seen my work. Like, however, I feel like, you know, 7 years ago, I was making items and people were like, I don't get it. It's fetish, but it's also like birthday party. It's giving me Lisa Frank, but also like Polly Pocket, but also like Leatherman. Like, what? And now, like, I see like products that I think maybe through some way have been influenced by this like fun mashup of like visuals that I've created.
Well, and it really kind of like leans into that play aesthetic of it, because I think, like, you know, sex is fun. Why shouldn't the gear associated with it be fun as well?
Exactly. And I love like laughing and being happy and joyful and getting into a fantasy of, you know, what I want sex and life and fashion to be. So I just made it and it's been wildly successful.
For it's fucking so sure. Well, I mean, like seeing that you designed for Lizzo not too long ago.
Yeah.
Was like my, like, how did that happen?
So that was so cool. That was last year in March. I don't know, you know, my partner just been like my partner is so great and like helps me kind of figure out my goals and figure out like really exciting things to do, because he's really creative too. And so he was just like, you should make something for Lizzo. You should make something for Lizzo. And I was like, how would that happen? Like, I don't know. But actually one of my mentors is a fashion designer, queer fashion designer who went to SAIC named Bikala, and he's like a amazing guy, queer icon. So I just like texted him because he had done some Coachella fashions for Lizzo, and I was like, hey Brad, like, I don't know if this is like kind of gauche for me to ask, but could you hook me up with Lizzo's stylist? Like, I feel like she should wear my work. And he was, like, so sweet and generous and was like, of course, I totally see this happening. So through the power of being gay and networking, I was, like, immediately patched in, you know, to her stylist named Marco, who's a really sweet queer guy. And he was like, we're going to be in town in 3 days. Can you have it ready? I was like, oh, my God. And I made for her a piece of mine that's pretty iconic and popular. It's this frame bra, kind of like a typical harness bra, but it has heart-shaped pasties that are anchored onto your titties with, like, harness straps, so that you can wear this bra without, like, a cover-up. So I wanted to make that for her. He sent me her measurements. But I didn't have, like, the exact measurements of each of her breasts. So I had to, like, look up all of these different photos of her titties in different positions, at different angles, and, like, just really study them to figure out, like, where to place the pasty, how long the straps had to be, because they're not adjustable.
Oh, jeez.
So I feel like, and I totally nailed it. It fit her great. I feel like a professional.
That's amazing to me. Like, the, yeah. Is that, like, cause I know that you also studied fashion, right? Like, is that something that you learn in school? Like, I mean, like, to the element of just looking at a series of photos and being like, okay, I think I can figure out this person's size.
You know, that's a really relevant question, and I'm glad that you asked it, because I've been having these conversations a lot with my friends about fashion school and plus size fashion, and we never learned ever anything about plus size fashion. And I was just telling my friend Anna, Baby Fat, who is a fashion blogger and smart gal, and a good friend of mine that in fashion school, I would often question, like, do we have to use, you know, tiny models? Could I bring someone else in? Could I do a plus size garment? And something that they taught us, and that I'm sure they still continue to teach students there, is that the model isn't supposed to be like a person. The model is supposed to be the representation of a hanger, but you can't send a hanger down the runway. So that's why we have models. And I do not believe in that at all. Not one bit.
That's wild.
Yeah. It's so weird. And so...
Well, and the idea of, like, a neutral body being a thin body.
Yes. They're like, oh, we don't want the body to get in the way of the clothes. You're showing off the clothes. So you couldn't possibly have, like, a big, fat, messy body getting in the way of clothing. And I was like, that doesn't seem right to me. And for people listening who don't know what I look like, you should go to my Instagram and you can see pretty much all of me there, which I love. but I am 5 feet tall. I'm very curvy. Got big titties and a big ass and a cute tummy. And so I was never like that default skinny person that I was like learning to design for. And I don't think that my work in school ever truly reflected those like skinny ideals. I just wasn't interested in it, and I'm still not. And I feel really like grateful that my clients trust me to make plus size lingerie for them, because I think I'm really good at it.
You are really good at it. No, like the people who I've seen you design for, like particularly the fat women who you've designed for, are like, they look stunning. Like Karina Shiro. Oh my God.
Yeah.
A total knockout in your work. It's wild.
Thank you. You know, I actually had to have one of my good friends who lives in the neighborhood come by yesterday to help me fit something. She's very petite, very thin. I was like, can you please come by? Because I'm struggling with this. And we were both laughing, and she said that's not a bad problem to have, you know, to be like not as good as at the very, very small folks, because I feel like in society, like, and in fashion, they want us to cater to them. And then the big bodies are like the hard ones to design for. But for me, honestly, it's the opposite.
Yeah, I find that one of the things I find really fascinating about your career path so far, like you personally, is that you very much in your field have both the thing of really breaking against the mold and being this kind of outlier figure, which is really cool. But also you've had like what you could call like, I don't know, traditional success. You know what I mean? Like
you've
been able to establish a studio like this, what we've been talking about a little bit so far, of like that you're opening a space. Like these things are very, there's probably a better way to put this, but like just textbook, like
they're benchmarks.
Textbook, yeah. Good job. You know, like I'm curious how that feels, given your unique perspective of doing work that is kind of bucking the standard.
Totally. I mean, it feels really awesome. It feels very authentic. You know, to who I am. I think that a lot of artists worry about, you know, selling out. Or, like, getting popular for the wrong reasons. And under capitalism, like, I don't know that I would necessarily judge anyone for that. Because, like, first and foremost, my brand has to be a business so that I can do it full time. But, yeah, I mean, I have done a lot of, like, conventionally successful things. And I am definitely a person who seeks those out, like, I love winning a scholarship. I love an accolade. I love a grant. Ever since I was a child, I really like those things. And I'm really good at kind of making a goal, manifesting and working towards it. I think it like kind of makes me sad sometimes, like a lot of my artist friends or businesses who like can't really focus on what's working because they, you know, are kind of like not too sure what their goals are. But yeah, like a couple years ago, I got to show a collection of work at the Chicago History Museum. And I've been involved in doing like mini fashion shows at the MCA. And I think a lot of that is like, I have the access to those spaces because I went to SAIC and people can sort of contextualize my fashion collection under like something academic or conceptual. So I think like obviously privilege plays a role in those accolades. But I also think it's so cool that I get to disrupt those type of spaces. Like at the Chicago History Museum, all these, you know, older white kind of respectable gays were there to see like, you know, I don't know what they thought they were going to see. And then it's like me and all my like hot, you know, queer and trans friends like out on the stage of a museum, like with pasties and thongs on. But I don't know. It's pretty cool.
That's awesome. Well, and in speaking of like you very much leaning into kind of the traditional trappings of what makes a successful business, I know that mentorship is something that you're very passionate about. Would you mind speaking to like what kind of what you envision for in terms of like incorporating a mentorship into this next step of your career?
Sure. So having mentors, being a mentor is like something, it's something that's always been really important to me. In college, I won this scholarship called the Point Foundation Scholarship, and it's the biggest national GLBTQ scholarship fund. So even as an undergrad, I got this scholarship, I got paired with a mentor, and I got to go to summer leadership forums, and they were so great. I love the Point Foundation. I really encourage all queer people to apply. So I kind of learned about that. My family of origin and I have kind of a messy relationship. I love them, but things weren't always great. So I didn't look to like my parents to be my mentors for many years. And so I learned to build a chosen family and then to like have them help me. So I have many mentors. I have one of my mentors is Jackie Boyd of the Care Plan. Another mentor of mine is Elizabeth Cronin, who owns Osrey Garden. My Aunt Vicky has become a mentor of mine. I love her. She's just an icon within our family for being generous and smart and just the best. So I've received this like mentorship from all these amazing women. And I'm actually a mentor now to someone within the Point Foundation. They like match students up to alums. And I really like that. So when I rented my space, I was thinking, this summer has been such a monumental and impactful time for thinking about how we can change the world and make it better. And when I rented the studio in June, I was just like really thinking hard about what I could do to give back, you know, not just to revel in my own success, but how could I use my resources for others. And I would love to start like a mentorship kind of residency where folks who are trying to start small businesses online through like e-commerce or through Instagram or whatever, but like don't know how, could come hang out with me a couple times a week for a couple months, and I could just like, you know, walk them through it and help them figure out how to get an LLC, how to set up a business bank account, how to do your quarterly tax estimates, like just all the stuff that isn't intuitive and nobody teaches us.
God, the extent to which none of this is taught is staggering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just such messy trial and error on every,
Oh, you know, yeah, you're doing the same thing.
It's wild. It is truly wild how many mistakes you have to make before getting it half right.
Mm-hmm. Right? Like, even just, you know, now that I have this space, I don't have to, but I wanted to make sure that all of the, like, commercial, you know, licensing and everything was right, because I, like, lay awake at night and think about things that I haven't done or things that I'm worried I'm going to mess up. But I like to just have everything, you know, done. Anyways, like, I had to register for the business license for the space, but to do that, I needed the IDOR number, which is the Illinois Department of Revenue, and for some reason, the IDOR thing was really hard, and I couldn't get in, and I couldn't file the sales tax report on time the first time, and I just remember, like, crying and telling my partner, like, this makes me want to quit. I can't figure this form out. Nobody's taught me how. There's no tutorial. You know, I was like, this makes me want to quit. But I figured it out, and I was like, wow. And it wasn't even that hard once I figured it out. Mm-hmm. But I was like, oh my God, I want to tell everybody how to do this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
No, it's, so I'm currently serving as, like, marketing director for a fledgling nonprofit, and it's so wild, like, how I never, like, me kind of, like, messily figuring out how to set up Scopy, I never mm-hmm. realized how much of a resource that even just base knowledge is. And just, like, talking about, yeah. Like, oh, yeah, like, you know, we need to set up a business bank account, but in order to do that, we need to have an assumed business name. In order to do that, you got to go down to the county clerk's office. And it's just, like, every, mm-hmm. just, like, all of these messy, complicated, in order to get the assumed business name, you got to go up to that office, and you got to get the name printed in that weird law journal for 3 weeks, then they mail you the thing.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck? It's just, like, the number of, like, weird, complicated hoops that you have to jump through in order to just, like, even receive payments.
Yeah.
Is just the most ridiculous damn thing in the world.
It's such gatekeeping.
Yeah.
You know, because I think about, like, people who start businesses and who do it with ease. I mean, I imagine, and this is just me imagining, like, the rich class. I imagine that they have, like, a family accountant that files the things for them. And I imagine they have a family lawyer who's like, oh, let me fill out the paperwork for you for, you know, if you need an LLC or an INC or a corp, whatever, you know, but we, like, us being, like, working class people, having to figure it out ourselves, is really daunting.
It's incredibly daunting. And it's like, I just remember that, you know, basically it took me 2 months to figure out, execute, and implement, like, what I wanted to do. Like, my goal with Scopy moving from 2017 to 2018 was to no longer receive payments mm-hmm. on PayPal. That was a 3-month process.
Oh, yes. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, because PayPal's fees.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. And if I had had help, if there had been even one person there to help me, it would have taken maybe a month. Mm-hmm. But because I was doing mm-hmm. it fully alone, it took me 3 months. And the amount of money that I lost in fees from PayPal because it took me 3 months, like,
of course.
So that's all to say, I think that mentorship is so, so important, especially for, like, folks with marginalized identities who are trying to, you know, set this up, who don't have those family mm-hmm. accountants. Like, I just, like, I really commend you on, you know, working to make this happen.
Thanks. Yeah. It feels really important to me. And especially as someone who doesn't have a lot of, like, capital, you know, I wish that I could be giving away, you know, a bunch of profit right now, but I just can't swing that because my business is so new that I was just trying to think of, like, other resources I have.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Moody just jumped from my computer tower to where my phone was and knocked my phone on the floor, so it just was kind of a...
So if you heard a bang, and also if there had been video, you would have seen me mouthing to Daniel, "Get her off of there! Get her off!"
My little Chula, she's a Chorky. She's 5 pounds. She gets really scared by her own farts, and she was just sitting on the ground and farted and scared herself
ruffled
a bunch of paper, like drop cloth. So if you hear some sounds, it's just her. It's scurrying around.
Well, one of the things I wanted to talk about with that too is, you know, I find it really interesting. I feel like I know personally a lot of people that have had to move during this time.
Mm.
And so I just think the idea of, and you know, I think there's also a lot of people that has entered their mind of, you know, just with so much happening, especially economically right now, things like moving into a new space, like, are weirdly attainable for some people, you know, like, or, mm-hmm. you know, like, I think that what I'm saying is that this experience is, to some degree, I think, potentially relatable. Like, what has it been like, through this pandemic, like, making a move like this for you?
Totally. Yeah, well, like, right when the pandemic started, I was super nervous. My partner is like a queer trans nurse who has a steady job. So we were like, okay, well, we'll have money from you being a nurse. But I really wasn't sure like what was going to happen with my business.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember like, you know, kind of being in the car, like picking my boo up from work. And it just felt kind of like before like a tornado hits or something.
Yeah.
You know, we were just like, oh my God, what's going to happen? And sitting in the car and posting on Instagram, like, okay, I'm going to bring back a couple of these styles. Cause I was just like, I'll just like grab some orders and then I'll probably get no more orders after this, you know? So I was like doing an incentive. I was like, you know, get it while it's hot. And like sitting in the car and just orders like flooding in, like order. And like my Shopify just blowing up. And I was like, oh my God. And then like a couple days later, you know, being really anxious at home and like feeling so worried and sitting on the couch and like just these orders flowing in. And I had my first $1,000 sales day, like the beginning of the pandemic. And I was like, what? Right. I've never hit $1,000 in sales in one day. And then that happened over and over and over again. And I was like, oh my God, like it was amazing because I feel like my clients kind of knew that it would be hard for me. And so everybody had the idea to kind of buy. So I had this like huge surge, which was great because I was able to put like a bunch of money into savings that I'd been building for a while to rent a space like this. And I eventually just had to close my custom orders because everybody and their boo was ordering a strap-on harness, which I love. But it's... it's the item of the summer. Like, I can make it in my sleep at this point because everybody's ordering, like, fun gear to just, like, be at home with and play. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and the other piece, too, is, like, what was the thing saying with the pandemic and the... I totally blanked on what I was going to say.
Totally blanked.
Maybe like moving to, oh, that's what I was going to tell you is that, so I already had a studio, that y'all have been to before. It was just kind of like this little carved out room in like the back of a gallery's basement.
Right.
Like it was fine. But it was pretty small. I was like definitely like bumping my elbows into things towards the end. So I wasn't too worried about moving because luckily it wasn't like with roommates or anything. Yeah. I remember like for the pandemic, like it feeling really stressful. My sister was going to move here in April and find roommates and stuff, but she was like, I just don't feel good about that. It seems too stressful. So me and Chris, my boo, just like moved everything from in our Prius like into my new space. And it's been really nice because I don't share it with anybody. I am not contacting, like I'm not getting anybody's germs. At my last space, I was sharing a bathroom. You know, like, so now I just am so isolated here, which is great. Because I'm also like immunocompromised, that I feel like I'm in my nice little bubble.
Yeah, I so that's actually what I remembered what it was, which is there's kind of a dual side to something that a lot of there's a piece of the rhetoric of how we're talking about the pandemic right now. Obviously, like, so for those that don't know, it's like late July. So that there's been a lot of talk of like reopening and what that looks like. And for one thing, your experience speaks volumes to the experience that a lot of small businesses that are on like Shopify or Etsy or in tech are experiencing, which is this like, you know, benefit of people having disposable income right now from, you know, unemployment or whatever. And then also, you know, being home. And I think that that piece of it's really interesting to me. But the other thing is that, you know, in so many ways, like the idea of we're not going to like for the idea of going back to normal is a thing that a lot of people are saying, and a lot it, it gets a lot of pushback because for a lot of people before the pandemic wasn't working for them, you know?
Obviously
there's massive tragedy that the pandemic has caused, and you know, it's not something to be celebrated per se, but in other ways it's really been a catalyst for change for a lot of people. You know, like it, like one of the things I think about a lot, there was if you Google like what's the work from home statistics for the American workforce, you get a lot of statistics from like years ago, because the idea of more Americans working from home is not solely a pandemic idea, but coronavirus like basically was the catalyst to make it happen that now something like 50% of jobs are going to continue to be work from home even after we get a vaccine, which is kind of surreal. And I'm curious, you know, for you, the thing that I think also isn't really talked about is this idea of a business that has actually weirdly benefited, you know? I mean, I guess, like, the first question is, like, what does that feel like? Like, is it a conflicted feeling at all, or is it just knowing that? Because I think that this was going to
happen. Yeah.
Like, I think that your work always was going to be successful, you know? But to have it, like, flip like that, you know, where you have day after day of, like, of big sales like that, like, it must be, like, the thought process there is interesting to me, of what that, how you got from there to making decisions that will benefit your career for years to come, you know?
Totally, yeah. I mean, a bunch of people have been asking me that, and I've also been apprehensive to share my successes, because I know that that's, like, not necessarily in good taste right now. And, you know, I apologize to people who may be comparing themselves and feeling not good enough. Like, I totally get that feeling. Yeah. And it's just, I mean, I don't know. It's just what happened. And I'm so grateful. But, yeah, there are definitely conflicting feelings. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I'm trying not to, like, beat myself up about it. I think that the best thing I can do is just, like I said, like, be of service and donate my time and my resources. And, you know, even if I can't donate, like, say, those profits that I got that day, I can't give those away right away. You know, I can save those. I can reinvest those into my business. Now I have a big store space, you know? So then that can hopefully generate more money in the future. So I don't know. I mean, a lot of my other friends who are fetish worker fashion brands have experienced the same like jump in sales. Pretty much all of my friends who like are my colleagues are also like closing their shops temporarily because they've just been flooded. which is awesome.
It's a good problem to have.
It's an interesting thing, though, right? Because it represents, like, a shift. That's what I mean. And you know, I'm sorry to have prefaced it the way that I did with talking about it being conflicted. Because I feel like I can, like, that makes sense to me. But I also think that I'm curious, like, you know, for someone that sees an opportunity that feels like a complete left turn in some ways, you know, like in that scenario where like someone's like, oh, weird, I have to close down my shop, but I'm getting more sales. You know, like that feels like, you know, if you told someone at the beginning of 2020 that that's what their success would look like for 2020, you know, given everything that happened, that would be not shocking, but not, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of people have, right. Like, and I, what I think about with where you're at now is you've made decisions that are really forward looking and beneficial and really smart, I think. And maybe that's not like the best way to ask a question, but I'm just kind of curious, like, you know, what advice do you give to creatives that are maybe that are staring down the face of their own, you know, decision to make?
Totally. So I read a lot of like self-help books. I listen to a lot of helpful podcasts. And one that I cannot recommend enough is called the Creative Pep Talk Podcast by this illustrator guy named Andy J. Pizza. And he's just like a really good, like, creative motivational speaker that helps me figure out like moves in my creative career and how to just like figure it out. Like I said before, like, I'm big on mentors. I'm big on asking for advice and kind of like sourcing stuff like through the community. So I mean, I think that a reason why my success, like why this year has been so successful for me, is because I've been slowly building up my Instagram and social media presence for the last, you know, 7 years. And I feel like kind of early on when I was doing that, some of my friends or family or whatever would kind of like eye roll, like, oh, you know, Instagram isn't everything. And like, oh, all millennials care about, you know, is the internet. But I knew that like, if I built an audience, then I would have clients and customers. So I think a big thing that kind of brought me through like the harder parts of the beginning of the pandemic was that I already had these like built-in fans who like weren't, you know, I wasn't seeing them IRL anyways. I was seeing them on the internet. So my advice to creatives who are feeling overwhelmed or at a crossroads, is to like really kind of study your own goals and approach them in strategic ways. You know, like my goal was to hit, you know, this year my goal is to hit 20,000 Instagram followers, because I figure if I have 20,000 followers, at least, you know, 50 of them a month will want to buy something from me. And that was my goal for the end of the year, and I hit 20,000 followers like last week. So I'm ahead of schedule, everything's working out. Just like play to your strength, you know, like don't like eye roll at things that seem corny or seem like too much work, you know, because like, what else are you going to do? Like, the time's going to pass anyways, you know?
Yeah.
Just.
Well, and I think that making those goals like sustain, like playing into your strong suits with those goals is such an important aspect of what you're talking about. Like, because you have built in, Nat, those skills of building that following that you've honed over, you know, 7 years, like having that be your 2020 goal is ambitious, but also like sustainable and completely within reach, which I think is such an important aspect of that. And like identifying it and focusing on it is what makes the difference. But knowing that you're capable of it, given the natural passing of time, is the key.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I'm not saying that like every artist can only be successful if they have like a social media following. For me, like that's just what worked for me, and I got a
Right.
lot of those really great engagement strategies from listening to the Creative Pep Talk podcast. I guess what I'm saying is that I see a lot of my friends like getting frustrated that things aren't working out for them, but they're not investigating enough why. And something that I've learned, like as a businesswoman, is that, trying and failing is sometimes a daily occurrence. You figure out what doesn't work and you move on. You don't dwell on that and get sad, that something you wanted or tried like flopped. It's like your failures can teach you more about yourself than your successes.
Yeah.
Which I know sounds very like Tony Robbins or like Gary Vaynerchuk or whatever, but it's true. Like, I don't know. And something that I've learned too from reading You Are a Badass by Jen Sincero is that like strike, like kind of like what does she say? She says, and I don't know that this is like blanket advice, but she says, figure out what you want, and then when you have the opportunity to go for it, don't overthink it. Just do it. Because if you hem and haw, you're going to talk yourself out of what you were going to do because you want to stay safe. And when I rented this space, I had the money saved up. It's right across the street from the post office. Like, as someone who does e-commerce,
Oh my
that's like
God.
essential.
Holy
It's
shit.
amazing. And I was just like, and I started hemming and hawing, and I was like, I don't know, because I was scared. And like, and after I signed the lease too, it took a lot of gumption to do it. And after I did it, I just got really overwhelmed by, oh my God, I have to paint and the furniture and the window treatments and this and that. And then I felt kind of like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done this. I should have just stayed in my little 150 square foot room, but I was like, it's too late. You already did it, So I think that having like kind of like the gumption to like just pounce on what you want and then like, knowing that you have like everything in place. I'm not saying take a huge risk that you don't know that you can sustain. But yeah, I don't know. Just kind of like making decisions from your heart and not to impress people. Like something that I've told my friends too is that like I don't compare myself to others really that much at all because I just like even if someone seems like they're doing better than me, like I mean, good for them. I love that for them. But also, like, I'm happy in my life because I'm lucky enough to have built out the life that I have. And, I try not to put too many metrics on, like, my success. Like, oh, I'm only successful if I have this many followers or if I have this much money in the bank. Like, no, I always try to reframe it as, I'm making these decisions because I want to live the life that makes me happy. And, even day to day, like if I'm happy in my daily kind of like life, then like that's really priceless and amazing. So I don't know. Like, yeah, I'm not doing it to like impress someone or to be like, aha, look, I'm at this stage, but you're at that stage. Like, no, that's not like in my character to feel that way. But even if someone didn't know me, like, I just want them to like be inspired by, me going for it and living a
Absolutely.
really cool life.
Well, and also, kind of speaking of going for it, I think that there's an expectation that that like in order to go for it, you kind of have to have your shit together. But that's not the case. I mean, like, for example, I know that you recently launched a GoFundMe in kind of in support of this new storefront, which is so exciting and like such a big step. Like, would you mind kind of speaking to like tell us how that's going? Like,
Oh
what,
yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, totally. And I wrote like at length about this in the like little story portion of the GoFundMe. But yeah, I mean, going back to kind of talking about like fashion designers in schools, and privilege, a lot, I think most fashion designers who start their brands, start them because they have wealthy family who can give them, you know, 6-digit, 7-digit startup money checks. And that's just how fashion is. It's really expensive to start a brand, to make it successful. Like, it is so such a privileged industry because it's so hard and expensive to do. So, you know, I'm really proud of myself that, you know, my business is self-funded and, you know, I've just kind of built it up from here. But that being said, like, I definitely still need funds to, like, buy a couch and buy, you know, just, like, I need, like, a different type of sewing machine to, like, assist with everything. And I, you know, was, like, definitely nervous and kind of self-conscious about asking for help. But I just tried to reframe it, you know, like how like in what world would I have like, you know, $100,000 to just build my dream store right away? Like, no, it's going to be an effort and like a labor of love. So I've been here for 2 months. When I got here, it was like the space had been empty for probably a year. It was kind of like dusty and the air was just like meh. Like the color, it was like a weird dirt and peach color. Weird. So yeah, it was just like meh. So we like completely cleaned it, and me, my partner and some of my friends helped me paint. We painted it all white. It feels very fresh. I built this really cool like horizontal fabric rack to hold all of my bolts of vinyl. Because I never had that before, and it just like looks really cool, right? It's like this like rainbow, that's like 7 feet tall of glitter vinyl bolts. Awesome. So yeah, it's coming along. I don't think that, you know, retail will be a thing for me, like safely with the pandemic, till next year. And that feels really good because it gives me lots of time to figure out like the merchandising and the setup of the shop aspect. But I've been working, some of my friends, you know, weren't really sure what my progress was like. They're like, have you moved in? Like, what's going on? Like, I've made probably 50 like orders here already. So it's like everything is in working order. It's going good.
That's so exciting.
Yeah, this is, like, interesting. There's, like, an IKEA shortage right now. So there's, like, many things that I have fundraised and gotten the money for. And I, like, want to buy them at IKEA, but IKEA is out of lots of stuff, like, a lot of their basics. So I think I'm going to have to wait a while to get some of the furniture that I want.
Wild.
I know, right? Who would have thought IKEA would run out?
Yeah. Honestly, that's so contrary to what I thought, because I was thinking to myself recently, like, wow, is IKEA even open? But I guess they are.
It's so wild. Like, and I was trying to like buy it online, but you can't even do that. You can't pick it up. Like, I've been cruising, you know, Facebook Marketplace and Craigslist for like the exact products that I want, but they're going so fast.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, it's so frustrating because I have this like vision of like I have a back room, like the front is like a bigger room and then with windows, and then the back room like a little smaller. So, you know, I have my shipping station back there, and I wanted to get a desk and these really pretty shelves to kind of archive everything, but everything is still in boxes because the shelves that I want are sold out. And will be for a while. And, like, every different version of them is sold out, too.
Wild.
Yeah. And, I mean, this is such, like, first world problem. I was, you know, telling Chris, I'm like, I'm so annoyed. I just want my IKEA. So dumb. But also, like, it's accessible. Like, the price point to me is accessible. Like, I'm sure I could, like, you know, Crate and Barrel or something. I don't know. But I can't afford any of it. No. I can afford IKEA price.
Right.
Yeah.
Just get her IKEA. Come on.
Come on. I really should buy things, you know. So maybe this is the universe being like, don't buy new shit. Like, go on the Facebook Marketplace. So it's more effort, but it'll probably be more ego.
Well, it's like, is Brown Elephant open?
Yeah, but we've been going, but they like hardly have anything because I think everyone is thirsty for furniture.
Right.
So I've been going a bunch, but I haven't. So if you guys are around and see anything,
yeah,
I'll send you my wish list, my IKEA wish list.
Hell yeah.
Well, we have a few minutes left. So the last thing we do with all of our guests is a 1-minute plug for anything they have upcoming, like letting folks know where they can check out your work or follow you on social media or things like that. Otherwise, we love hearing shout-outs to other folks that are doing dope work or any media that you're personally consuming, self-care or otherwise, music, movies, TV shows, things like that.
Yeah, so I would advise everyone to Nat Glitter Kink. Nat is spelled G-N-A-T. And so I'm on Instagram as that. Go to my website, go to my shop. On both of those places, you will see links to support me in this venture of the shop. If anybody wanted to donate something, anything would be so, so amazing. Like, you know, I was telling my friends, you know, a curtain panel is $5, you know, so even if you don't feel like you can give like $50 or something. I'm also selling some of my like signature and really like hard to get items now to fundraise. So you can go to my shop and buy the Party Girl gear. I'm also selling the super limited edition Party Girl mask, which is like a, you know, the surgical style mask in clear vinyl stuffed with glitter and confetti. It's not for medical use. It's like a medical fetish situation. I don't want anyone getting exposed on my account. And what else? Don't have any events coming up. I normally do nightlife, but nightlife IRL is canceled. So let me think. I think that's about it. I'm just fundraising, being cute on Instagram, doing my best. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this has been lovely. I'm so glad that we were able to make this happen.
Me too. Yeah, I love talking to you guys.
Thank you all so much for listening. I've been Dan Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with what we're up to, you can definitely find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram under Scoppy Magazine. But most importantly, do find our Discord server. That is where we have been in this time having the most luck with building a community, letting people know what we're up to, and just outright beating the algorithm in all social media platforms. You can also find the podcast, the one you listen to right now, in most podcast places, including Google Play, iTunes Podcasts, and Radio Public.
And I'm here, as always, to talk about the importance of subscribing, and now more so than ever, during our Sustain campaign. For as little as $2 a month, you can become a sustainer, and for that, you'll receive an email notification every time we post any piece of content. It is so worth it, and it makes such a difference to us. So please give it some thought. So, give a little, give a lot, and if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Cool. Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.